Octa Non Verba is a show that's raw and real, featuring hard-hitting interviews with people that live by the ethos of actions, not words. Marcus Aurelius Anderson is a TEDx speaker, best-selling author, veteran, and leadership and mindset coach. With this show, you get to join Marcus as he goes inside the minds and experiences of the world's most successful warriors, leaders, entrepreneurs, and experts. With each episode, you're going to get the philosophies, concepts, tactics, and strategies these leaders use to turn adversity into victory. Live an extraordinary life based on actions, not words. Now, here's your host, Marcus Aurelius Anderson.
Octa Non Verba is a Latin phrase that means actions, not words. If you want to know what somebody truly believes, don't listen to their words. Instead, observe their actions. I'm Marcus Aurelius Anderson, and my guest today truly embodies that phrase. Brady Pasola is a U.S. Marine Corps veteran with extensive experience in teaching tactical disciplines, including firearms, self-defense, and survival. He has worked as a firearms instructor for civilians, law enforcement, and military personnel, specializing in firearms fundamentals and CQB applications. He's also served as an executive protection agent and security consultant, safeguarding politicians, artists, celebrities, and high net worth individuals. In addition, Brady founded Triple B Adventure, a nonprofit focused on improving veterans' mental health through outdoor adventures. What a great way to go. He stepped down from this role about 5 years ago. He transitioned into an advisory position to prioritize his family and develop coaching programs based on the Stoic philosophy. Currently, Brady specializes in using Stoic philosophy to enhance cognitive function, decision-making, and emotional survival for individuals in the military, law enforcement, and tactical industries. He also coaches people on mental resilience, social independence, and self-reliance using Stoic logic and reasons to overcome emotional reactions and cultivate happiness and peace in chaotic times. Brady, I want to give a little bit of background and context to this conversation. We've known each other for a while. You were on the podcast in 22, but we've known each other for a while. And you sent me a DM on the gram and you were like, hey, how you doing? And I just reached out. I was like, hey, how's everything? Are you good? And you're like, I got this this idea that I'd love to talk to you about. And you've had this chamber for quite a while. And when you told it to me, immediately we talked on the phone and I was just like, yes, hell yes. Let's get on there and talk about this. So tell me exactly how the conversation went for you. And we'll jump right into this notion of stoicism and how to apply it in the AI world today.
So I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes you'll lay awake at nighttime or wake up in the middle of the night and you'll think about something. And something that popped up in my head was about artificial intelligence. I'm kind of looking into it recently. And then I've been looking at like social media algorithms and how often it's used to manipulate public opinion and people's opinion. And I thought, well, how can I combat that? And then, I mean, the answer has been right in front of me for a long time. Just as you know, as I practice Stoicism, just like you do, that's why we were on the first time. I'm like, well, how can Stoicism combat emotional manipulation from artificial intelligence? Yesterday, and that's, I think that was the first opening line that I gave yesterday when I picked up the phone, is I want to talk about how to use Stoicism to combat emotional manipulation of artificial intelligence. And I think you paused and went like, oh, yes, let's talk about that. Yeah. And I think that's such an important use of Stoicism. It's a 25-year-old philosophy. It goes way back then. And I don't think anyone who wrote these books or Zeno or Crispus or Marcus Aurelius or Epictetus ever thought that their writings could be used to help combat advanced technology of the human race in 2024, if you think about it, foreign of a concept is it? And when I was going back through the writings and the studies, I often resort back to Epictetus. He's one of my favorites just because he's kind of a smartass in many ways. But the one quote that stuck out to me the most, I think, is the most applicable to combating emotional manipulation of AI through Stoic philosophy is this one by Epictetus. And it says, most of what passes for legitimate entertainment is inferior or foolish and only caters to exploits people's weaknesses. Avoid being one of the mob who indulges in such pastimes. Your life is too short and you have important things to do. Be discriminating about what images and ideas you permit into your mind. If you yourself don't choose what thoughts and images you expose yourself to, someone else will, and their motives may not be the highest. It is the easiest thing in the world to slide imperceptibly into vulgarity, but there's no need for that to happen if you determine not to waste your time and attention on mindless pap. I mean, what a hell of a quote.
Yeah, I think that that alone, we'll just end the podcast here. If we just leave that as it is.
Yeah.
People take that, break it down, look at that. And it seems very much a solution to so many things that we see today with, again, Epictetus is famous about talking about anxiety, controlling what is controllable. This notion of what we'll discuss with the wisdom, temperance, justice, courage of these ethics, these virtues from Stoicism. It's right. It's everything, because today with the, I'm picking up my cell phone and showing it, it's very much this thing where it's instantaneous. Yeah. We get this information right now, but that does not necessarily mean that more is better. Oftentimes they go into quantity with an attempt to find quality, but yet oftentimes they just get overwhelmed by these other things. And now they're not making the right decisions because of overwhelm or cognitive overload or just fatigue in general.
Well, they're choosing mindless pap. That's what they're yes. doing. And most of us do. And you know, I'm not perfect. I'm speaking of a place of imperfection. There's days where I'm like just scrolling through because I want to dismiss the thoughts in my head instead of going at them like I should, like the Stoics say I should, you know, finding that inner fortitude, that inner citadel. Instead, I'm distracting myself with mindless pap. And that's the problem these days is I think most of our society, unfortunately, is looking for a distraction. Because the reality of what we're going through right now with the world and the way it is emotionally disturbing. It does elicit an emotional response. It elicits fear. It elicits anger, sadness. Just to see what we see on TV and what we see on social media. And this is where we get into the realm of artificial intelligence and the manipulation of by artificial intelligence for engagements. And I think the simplest model for talking about this is the use of AI in social media algorithms, right? It is its own autonomous creature that while it has its human input and coding and it's trained, the AI itself is designed to recognize engagements, likes, clicks, shares, comments. And even so it looks at your comments. Whether they're positive or negative, it doesn't matter. It's an engagement. And so, as we know in algorithms, as social media guys like you and me who spend a lot of time, we're always trying to work with the algorithm to figure out what gets our content in front of people. And that's what it is. It's likes, comments, shares. And with those comments, it doesn't matter if they're positive comments or negative comments. They're still comments. Yeah. And the more engagement that content has, the algorithm says, okay, there's a lot of engagement here. Let's put this in front of people. And because this content oftentimes is developed by other human beings, AI takes that. AI doesn't really care about what the content is. AI cares about the engagement it has and puts in front of you. So there's still an emotional human manipulation. It's just that they're using AI as a tool to manipulate human emotion to elicit that emotional response. And once they elicit that emotional response, they now have control of your actions. And what I mean by that is you're liking, sharing, and commenting. You're now under the influence of emotion, engaging with the content. And because you've engaged with that content, AI says, oh, there's a lot of engagements. There's all this information right here. They're liking, clicking, sharing. This is important to me. Let's put this at the top so everyone else should see it. So it's a combination of both AI itself and the human element behind AI to use it as a tool for emotional manipulation.
It's so true. And as we've understanding from the Stoic concept or even from the Zen or Taoist Stoic concept, emotions assassinate the truth. They become the master of us. And if we're unable to master our own emotions, then we are just dragged along willfully and oftentimes because we won't let go of that. That the whole notion of let go or be dragged. If we're unable to separate ourselves from that and step back logically and use this capacity to say, well, why is this trying to use emotive language to get me involved? Why is this trying to hook into me? Now we see what happens. And we've seen it even during the election cycles where there's so much of that being used and people are pushing in different directions. Again, outrage is pretty much what people are looking for because it creates that kind of response on both sides of the aisle. Whether we look at it as something that's divisive by intention, with a sinister intent or not, the end result is still there. Oftentimes, both sides are not willing to listen to the other side. Both sides have confirmation and cognitive biases that keep them concrete bound in this place. So no matter what kind of points you make, it's going to fall on deaf ears in the process of doing these things. And if all AI or ChatGPT is doing is fanning the flames, then that's not really helping us come to places where we can understand each other or look at the similarities. All it does is really focus on the differences and keeps us in those positions of us versus them.
Right. And I still think that with AI, I think to a certain extent it might recognize it, but not in a sentient way, but more as a trained way of like, oh, these human emotions or these actions by humans. It doesn't know that it's manipulating us. Only the humans who program the AI do, because they're programming the algorithms. And that may not even be the intent either. It could be an unfortunate side effect of the programming with an AI. But that being said, it's one of those things that we need to recognize and realize that whether it's AI, humans, politics, news, and even news guys, newscasters will tell you, unless it's if it bleeds, it leads, right? And so because if it bleeds, it leads, what they're doing is soliciting your emotional response. It's creating, they're giving you images of blood and gore and war, and it's captivating. Everything about what is fed to us, this mindless pap, is fed to us because it is playing off our natural human emotion. We are easily triggered, for lack of a better term. I hate using that. But human beings are easily by external events. And so that's where I find Stoicism becomes such a potent and useful tool, because Stoicism teaches us, and this is where the little Stoicism comes in. People talk about, oh, well, it's suppression of emotions, and I fucking can't stand. One of the things that pisses me off more than anything else, which is, that's not very Stoic of you, is that word right there. When people who actually don't study Stoicism, who might see you from afar talk about it, or, you know, teach about it or make videos about it, and like the other day I made a joke. I was just ranting about something. I just thought it was funny. Well, that's not very Stoic of you. I'm unfollowing you. And I'm like, we're not Spock, dude. I'm not a machine. I'm a human being. I still suffer from the human condition, which means that I like humor. And sometimes I have things to say. And sometimes they're not quite as eloquent as you would read with the classics. Yes, I do talk about Stoicism and I read Stoicism, but I still suffer from this shitty condition we all call being human, to which there is no cure, but there is treatment. But that being said, with this human condition, going back to human manipulation and the use of Stoicism, is that Stoicism allows us an opportunity to be more mindful and present and rational about what we're watching. If you understand the intentions of human beings, it is easier to combat the emotional solicitation that they're trying to attempt with you. Right. And the way I say it like this with everybody else, and I know it seems a little bit more pretty of a, and maybe sometime, maybe somewhere down the road, someone will quote me on this and I'll be known as one of the great Stoic influencers of our 2024. But the palette of human emotions is a wide array of colors to which you can use to paint a picture of your actions. And when you let other people control your emotions, you're handing them a paintbrush in which to paint your actions with. And that picture isn't going to be a very pretty painting that you want anyone else to see. And I think that's important to recognize, is that when you let humans control, affect your emotions, you are now handing them over your actions. And you may not be aware of it, but your anger will cause you to do things that you may regret, the same way alcohol does, the same way drugs do. That's why I call it operating under the influence of emotion, because you are influenced in the part of your brain that alcohol and drugs influence, the part of your brain, and it clouds your judgment.
And there are many people, if we look at philosophy, they don't say that the emotion doesn't exist. And any philosophy that says you should just push it down is not really a philosophy, because it's supposed to be teaching us how to deal with the emotion. The people that we see throughout history that are used as examples of what not to do with emotion, anger, for example, those are people that are ambushed by it, that are unable to actually control it. And that's why we see these people that are acting from that place, that emotive language becomes an emotive thought, it becomes a potential action. Having said that, what should we be looking at? We should be taking two or three steps back. This tweet angers me, or this person's Instagram post pisses me off. Well, I can lash out at them, but the idea is actually, let me look at myself. Why am I so angry about this? What delicate sensibility have I not built enough of a strength around? Or again, I should be able to listen to what anybody has to say. And then if I don't like it, I can either scroll past or remove myself from the environment. It's not as if I am walking into their front room and screaming what I'm saying for my content. It's like, no, they have the option to be able to take a look at it or not. And if they don't want to, no problem. But when they turn it into this thing where it's about them, and now I'm offended by this and I'm triggered by this, there's only so much I can do, right?
Well, as Marcus Freud says, we have the option of having no opinion. There's no need to get worked up about this. It's not asking to be judged by you.
Absolutely.
And that's where I think it's so important to remain present and mindful, is when you are engaging with social media, when you are watching the news or reading an article. I think you need to flip a switch on inside your brain, goes, okay, or talk to yourself, say a couple of things to yourself before I read this, before I watch this, before I engage in this. Remember, the words on this page are written by a human being with obvious bias. As much as we want journalists to be objective, we cannot logically, rationally, and honestly expect them to do so. And the reason why is because they are still human beings. As Plato says, everything is perfect until it reaches the mind of man, and then we become very fallible. And we human beings are fallible creatures. We have our biases. We have our intents. And journalists these days, and honestly, I look at journalists the same way I look at politicians. They are not to be celebrated. They are not to be worshipped. They are just as fallible as well as corrupt, like the rest of us have the potential to be so. Unfortunately, they are in positions where we expect them to be above basic human instinct, above basic human corruption and fallibility. We expect them to hold themselves to a higher standard, to which they don't. Most of the content of journalists these days are to elicit that emotional response. So their article gets seen, and then they get a promotion within their agency. You know, and so it's no longer about integrity. Integrity has gone away. And I feel like I'm being biased right now, and I'll recognize that and I'll be honest with you. But from my observation, I look towards the Stoic virtue of temperance, moderation, to give an opinion on this aspect, this view that I have, is that both left and right, medias and politicians, are using basic human emotion to win elections, to get their articles seen, to get legislation passed. It's not so much about the people anymore as it's about themselves. And that's what I would say that gives me an emotional solicitation, is just seeing how disheartening that is and how dishonest they are and how they use human emotion to manipulate that. Now, the difference between me and the other emotional manipulations, I recognize that I'm upset about it. But what are my actions going to be? Are they going to be under the influence of anger and sadness, or are they going to be under the influence of logic with hope of contributing to some sort of change in that matter? And I think that's what's so important about guys like you, with the platform that you have in Stoicism, is you're allowing me an opportunity to get on here and express this thought, this idea, especially with AI and the human motivation and intent behind it. Is that we're able to look at it with the rational mind. We're able to explore how we feel about this, but also being in company of each other, being able to also rationalize it despite what we feel about it.
Yeah, and that's where these virtues help us. And like we were discussing last night, it depends on what definition of these virtues that they put into AI. I'm looking at right here at the Merriam-Webster's version of what justice does. And it says, the maintenance or administration of what is just, especially by impartial adjustments of conflicting claims or the assignment of merit rewarded or punished. And when you were looking through some of these things with ChatGPT and with AI, which again, I think I told you when we were speaking last night, I haven't really explored or delved into this. As a matter of fact, I've kind of been very old school, because even my new book that's coming out, when I talked to the recording company, they said, hey, we've got this great thing now. Instead of you coming in and speaking for 7 hours and us editing it all down, we just have you come in and read like 4 pages, and then AI will reproduce your voice and the rest of it will be read as if you were the one doing it. And I said, hell no, I'm not doing that. So for those of you that are questioning me, I'm not using AI or ChatGPT to write anything that you read in a book, any of my posts. It's all flawed human experiences. But again, as Brady was saying, that's where this comes from. That's where the wisdom comes from, is from falling down, from making the mistake. And the goal is to give you those lessons from the mistake, as opposed to saying, well, here's 3 quotes from a Stoic, and now we're going to connect the dots. Frankly, especially now with Stoicism being as popular as it is now, it's very easy to do that. It's very easy and it's rudimentary to do those things, in my opinion. The things that we're trying to talk about is exactly what Stoicism should be, in my opinion, which is the application of the philosophy, the questioning of ourselves. Where am I wrong? Where are the red flags? Where are the blind spots? Where are the weaknesses that I may not be aware of? And by going through and looking at what these things actually stand for, again, this definition of justice, it's a little bit different than what happened when you were asking ChatGPT about it, correct?
Yeah, the idea of Stoic justice is different from what we understand in justice, like, say, malum ense, malum prohibitum, which is what, you know, against nature or against law. And the idea of Stoic justice is different. When I was asking ChatGPT about Stoic justice, and that's what I found interesting, is that it was more about social justice, which, don't get me wrong, there is a bit of social justice within Stoic philosophy that we can't deny, because it talks about working with humans. And even Marcus Aurelius says that humans are a proper occupation, and that we should, you know, so when wake up in the morning, tell yourself that you'll meet, I'll paraphrase, in the morning, you're going to meet really shitty people. And they're going to piss you off, but they're just like you, because they possess the same capability for reason as you do, but also the same capability for evil that you do. And to work against them is unnatural. And obviously, that's a paraphrase. So there is still some social justice. But when we talk about Stoic justice is treating people according to how they should be treated. Now, I've talked about treating people with kindness, dignity, and respect, regardless of how they treat you. And the reason why I say that we should do that is not for them, but for you. Because you recognize that you can't change human behavior. And you recognize the intent that they're fallible human beings just like you are. And just because they get mad at you over something doesn't necessarily mean you need to take offense to it, or that you should upset yourself about it. As Marcus Aurelius says, you know, when people get upset at you or criticize you, look in their soul and you won't be racked with anxiety about what they should feel about you. Right? So when you observe humans and understand who they are, you're able to dismiss the things that they say as just mere noise. Even if they have intent to disrespect you, if you take it as disrespect, then yes, you've been disrespected. But if you accept it as just mere noise and go, this poor soul, he's having a bad day, he's upset, it's when those words turn into violence. And I'm not talking about violence in the sense of where it's a violence. I'm talking about actual physical kinetic combat. You put your hands on me and then, well, as they say in Stoic justice, I will treat you according to how you act. And I will reciprocate, not with malicious intention, but with Stoic duty of defending myself rationally and without emotion. As though you say, executive protection, with the minimal force necessary to stop the threat. So people don't understand that Stoicism isn't about passivity. It's never been about that. It's about acting rationally despite the circumstances. And that's where Stoic justice is so important, to recognize that it's treating other people's kindness, dignity, and respect, regardless of how they treat you. Because even then, even my job, regardless of how people talk to you or treat you, you have to do everything you can to de-escalate the situation to ensure that there is no further actions committed by that person. You need to remain logical and rational. As we know, the military calm breeds calm. I'm going on a bit of a tangent here because Welcome to my ADHD. But that being said, yeah, it was interesting with the ChatGPT. There showed clear bias that was more political social justice than objective and philosophical justice. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And then we see who's programming it. We see what that influence is, where those prejudices are naturally kind of embedded in it. And here's the thing that we see. It's just like a business. It may seem small when you're just, when you're having this conversation with it. But when we look at it on a global scale with millions of people consistently, eventually that creates this ripple effect that becomes this wave that's undeniable. And you were saying how that when you would look at it and you would ask it questions and it would give you responses back, when you would catch it or when you would check it and you're like, actually, that's incorrect, all of a sudden it would immediately back up. But we were also saying yesterday and even before we hit record today, for so many people today, if it's on the internet and if it's in this search algorithm that they're going for, whatever it says must be true. And if they're ill-informed or if they're partially informed and they're not even sure how to feel about whatever this subject matter may be or whatever event is going on currently, they will often go towards this thing to ask it, essentially, how should I feel about this? What should I think about this? What does this really mean to me? And just like with the business where when they scale, they're trying to scale all this great stuff, but the things that they're doing badly scales as well. So if we're scaling this small prejudice or this small bias, by the time we get it to a much higher level, it's created so much momentum that it's really hard to stop. And obviously, it's undeniable when you see it.
It's funny is that ChatGPT is becoming an authority on knowledge. It's an epistemological entity in itself, where this is where knowledge comes from now. It's kind of the same way we looked at Wikipedia for the longest time. We use Wikipedia sources all the time. Well, what's the easiest source of knowledge that I have that we feel is most relevant? Well, we go to Wikipedia, which for the most part is generally pretty accurate. There are people that get in there and go and say, well, hold on a second, this is inaccurate. Let's change this. But I've also watched changes that definitely have a clear human or political bias to it that has been changed and information being changed or reworded. And that's where yesterday, when I was asking questions, ChatGPT, and it's interesting to have conversations with ChatGPT because you can train it to sound more human like you. And with the voiceovers that it has, it now matches tone, inflection. And I noticed when I was talking to ChatGPT and it was talking back, it was actually using human filler words or filler pauses, like, well, here's the thing, like, swear to God,
wow.
it'll use and I've listened to talk about people. It's like, you're right on with that assessment, but here's the thing that I was thinking, it will use a lot of human inflections and tones in it to make it sound more human. And because that we know ChatGPT has access to this unlimited knowledge, it closes this gap on our curiosity and information. It's quick now. We don't have to research anymore because ChatGPT can do it for us. But as you mentioned here in the last thing you said, is that we talked about yesterday, and my experience is that I've spotted inconsistencies or misinformation that I'm like, actually, that's incorrect. And ChatGPT will be like, you're right. You're incorrect. I apologize for that. I should have looked further. And upon further information, this is what is correct. And so sometimes it will make stuff up to try and appease an immediate response to you or give you an immediate response. Almost like, like a kid, like, did you do this? Yeah, sure. They didn't really do it, or they don't know. They just made some shit up to give you an answer. And it's almost like ChatGPT is trying to satiate the human expectation of what ChatGPT is, almost like it's an adolescent. And I think that's what we're at right now with AI, is it's still its adolescence. And I don't think we need to fear it right now quite as much as people tend to fear it. I think what we should fear more right now is the human manipulation of it, how it's coded, how it's programmed, how it's trained, who's it trained by? Because that's just like anything else. You know, it's a programming, whether we program a cruise missile to attack a target 2,500 miles away, or we program an AI to give the response that we want it to give to people who are seeking an authority on a subject. And so I think what's a problem is now is ChatGPT is going to be seen as this authority of knowledge, this authority on subjects where, okay, well, it can't be wrong because it's a machine itself and therefore has access to the internet and it can look up information. Well, the information it's looking at on the internet is still human-generated information and content. So it's still getting this information from human beings who are just as fallible as Plato tells us that we are. And so right now, I don't think our enemy is AI. I think our enemy right now is the human utilization, programming, and manipulation AI to manipulate us as human beings when we look at things as the authority. It's like, it's why con men are so, and narcissists and sociopaths are so successful in manipulation of human beings is because they appear to be an authority of a subject or a topic.
And I think, again, it comes back to that notion of what's the intent behind it? What is the expectation? What is it trying to do? We were also discussing this notion of, how do I say it? When we look at a philosophy, it is by nature going to be influenced by academia in some capacity. And again, if you write something down or if you read a lot of philosophy, we will see people that will sort of come out of the woodwork and they'll straw man, they'll use some of these debating techniques, they'll come at something or they'll use other options to try to break something down, even though logically it doesn't hold any water. And this is essentially the very definition of what we see in many social media posts today, which is a quote and then something taken way out of context to twist into a political ideology or a belief system or some sort of persuasion, which is in and of itself the very definition of rhetoric.
It'll misquote something with authority to give it context, right? They'll try and put it into a context that has nothing to do with it. And you and I had this conversation with academia, and I've had conversations with other people about this. You know, I don't have a doctorate. I have my little peasant associate's degree from my GI Bill. And so that 25 cents might get me a cup of coffee. But that being said, you know, what's the difference between me and a doctorate of philosophy? One, doctorate of philosophy is generalized information that they studied over a long period of time and took a lot of money within certain walls, that within those walls, it's this idea that within those walls, if you read books within those walls, you are more educated than someone who sits here at home within my walls and has less debt than someone with a PhD and more access, but also more intention and interest and to a specified area of philosophy. And I'll debate anybody with a doctorate within the confines and context of Stoic philosophy, because what I feel is a lot of these academias and these PhDs, and not to discount them or disrespect them, because it still takes a lot of time and they've learned a lot of knowledge and they've gone these depths of human knowledge that is impressive and spent time behind books. And so that in itself deserves a lot of respect. But it's generalized information. And when I see a philosophy teacher or I meet a philosophy teacher, to me, it feels like they're just regurgitating information and they're not adopting any of these philosophies as something to contemplate, to ponder, to live by. And that's where Stoic philosophy, I think, is so important. And like you mentioned before, it's become so popular, but it's also become so twisted and used for political purposes or social media or popularity rather than for an actual, the purpose is that it's a style for living. It's a design for living. That's what it is. I think it's one of the few philosophies out there that has an actual design to adopt and live by. Even the Stoics say, you know, don't just show that you read books, you know, show it through external actions, show it by your actions, act a non-verbal, like, you know, as you have here in the podcast, actions, not deeds. But with academia, with the doctors behind your name, you know, we can go on this for a long time and talk about it, but I suspect after this podcast and someone listens to it, there's going to be a paper that's going to be written about it and someone's going to adopt it and put it in there, but I don't care. Do what you want to. If you think that you can word it better than I can, which I'm most certainly sure that you can, but the idea is still within my brain and I'm still going to explore it and I'm still going to contest what someone in academia might write. And sure, they might get the credit. I give a fuck about that. What I care about is getting the information out there and allowing people like you and me who aren't in academia to ponder these things and find peace within this new world we're living in, where where technology is going to be, for us as humanity, technology is going to be our partner in existence. And whether it becomes a sentient partner in our existence or an aid to our existence, from here on out, this is something that we have to accept. And I think the use of Stoic philosophy, a 2,500-year-old philosophy by some Phoenician merchant who crashed because he can't navigate to save his life or tell weather for family. And so now I'm here reading these books and trying to help myself because, oh boy, can't, for some reason, a Phoenician can't sail, which still is funny to me because Phoenicians were these spreaders, spreaders of the first, you know, written language. You know, the Phoenicians wouldn't trade with you unless you were able to read or write, right? So because some Phoenician can't tell weather and sail, here we are talking about how to use his lack of skill to combat. Maybe it's overly simplistic. I'm just having fun with it. I think Stoicism is so relevant now more than ever. You know, and people will ask, well, why philosophy? Why Stoicism? Well, you know, in 400 BC, people don't realize how shitty life was in Greece and Rome and the early world. You know, people talk about going back where it was more simple. Well, no, you had warring tribes. You were constantly being attacked by someone, either by the Persians or by the, you know, the Gauls or the Celts or the Romans or whoever it was at the time trying to slaughter each other for resources, for money, for reproduction, for territory. And life was kind of shitty. So unless you were part of the noble class, life kind of sucked. People were dumping shit on you. The streets smelled like hell. You know, it wasn't these great marble columns of and beauty quite like people think it is, you know? Yeah. I mean, the Antonine Plague went on for how many years? That took out, you know, Marcus Aurelius' brother and possibly Marcus Aurelius because he was a frail guy himself. So they're like, well, why philosophy? Well, because no one had psychiatry. They had watered down wine and people trying to figure out why they felt like shit all the time. Why am I so anxious? Why am I so upset? Why do I feel like crap all the time? Well, it's because life around you actually kind of sucks a little bit. So here the Stoics are like, yeah, life sucks. Here's how we take some Socratic philosophy with some other philosophy and talk about it in a rational way that goes, well, yeah, I feel like shit, but why do I feel like shit? And do I need to feel like shit? And is me feeling shit doing anything for me? No. So let me put this aside, go on logically with my life and rationally and stop worrying about things beyond my control. I can't control this. I can't control my actions and my emotions to this. So I can choose to feel better about it despite what's going on around me. Really, I can do it? Yeah, you certainly can. I feel good now. 2,500 years later, we have social media constantly making people feel like shit because people look at how people live on social media, whether, oh, I don't have enough followers, or they live this life, or they have this beautiful girl, or this beautiful guy, or this and that. They're looking at this and comparing themselves, not realizing that how it's affecting them. And when they like, share, click, comment, the algorithm is taking that and putting that in front of more people who believe in the same thing, that want the same thing, rather than we just sit back and take philosophy and go, or Stoic philosophy and go, this isn't real. This is social media. This is an algorithm manipulating the content in front of me because it wants me to see this content because I liked on something or I clicked on something or commented on something. And so it's presenting this in front of me because it wants me to like, click, share, and other people can see this. And I almost feel like a social responsibility where if we see something that is inherently vulgar or inherently manipulative, that we don't engage with it. So therefore, we're combating AI in a sense of going, well, I'm not going to affect me. If I don't let it affect me and I don't engage with this, it reduces its potency for it to go in front of other people's eyes.
And this reminds me of the conversation I had with Zach Pogrob, Behavior Hack, where he was talking about this notion of, in his mind, unless it's something that actually makes him better or is serving him, giving him like genuine like value and quality, he either immediately blocks it or unfollows or at least mutes it. Because there is so much that's out there now, again, so much pap, 99% of what we see is, and again, we look at this idea of influence or manipulation or even rhetoric, they're doing this because they're trying to sell us a product, a course, whatever the case may be. But the reason why I try to not use as much of the academia is simply because in my experience from reading a lot of these things, the more that we read into that kind of mentality, the more that we either echo those sentiments or the more that we start to go down that road in thought. And so again, this idea of being jargonistic, this idea of making it much more convoluted than it needs to be, this whole idea of Nietzsche where it's like they make the water muddy to make it appear deep. They try to wear that down. But for us, we're trying to get right to the point. And again, having a military background or having any sort of outdoor physicality, stoicism will be a natural progression for you once you've been under any kind of hardship. When you start understanding, again, this Epictetus mentality of don't tell me your philosophy, embody it. Epictetus really having the revolutionary concept of just saying, listen, can I control this right now? It's raining outside. Yeah, that sucks, but I still have to do my patrol. It doesn't matter if I like it or not. That's why I always talk about adversity, not giving a shit about your opinions, not caring about what you would like to happen. We're here now. How are we going to respond to it? And then is this emotion or this thought that I'm having, is this making me better? Is this emboldening me? Or is this actually making me weaker and making me less of a person who's able to take action when I need to? And so many times going through these things, people will grab these quotes and kind of hold on to them, but they will not apply them. And that's why when you were talking about all the things you were talking about with your peas and having the practice component to it as well, that's everything. And I'm glad that you actually are practicing these things as opposed to just pontificating and regurgitating like some other people do.
You have to, when you take on stoicism, rather than try and regurgitate other people out there, you have to live it. You have to try, and you're not going to be perfect, right? It's the path to eudaimonia is that's what it is. It's a path. There's no perfection in it. I do my best every day, and do I fail every day? Yes, I do. I fail in the eyes of myself because you try and set expectations for yourself. Now, not that you should be so hard on yourself all the time. You should give yourself, you know, when we talk about stoic justice, it also means justice for yourself, being kind, being dignified to yourself and respecting yourself. Is sometimes I'm failing when I talk about this. I'm not talking from a place of perfection by any means. I'm talking to a place that I've gone far. I'm off the path, and I'm just trying to bring people up to where I'm at because I still got a long path ahead of me. And stoicism is that path. It's that constant path of working on yourself and self-improvement. And when we take in stoicism and we start plugging into other equations. And I think stoicism is that variable that we can solve other equations with within the human experience, that being AI. I think we should treat AI like we treat human beings in stoicism, right? That it is still a product of human development. And we can either see it as an adversary or we can see it as a functional tool to aid us. Right? Because I'm not going to sit here and say that I haven't used ChatGPT to help me out. It absolutely has. I have ADHD. And when I can't get a thought straight or concentrate on a thought, I use ChatGPT to help me specify a thought and go into it. And then I'm able to create a framework for a thought and then go in there and start actually changing up and going through and redoing it. But it allows me to focus a thought or allows me to provide information. You just have to be aware, not only aware of the fallibility of ChatGPT, like you have to be aware of fallibility with other human beings, right? It is still a product. Now, for those who don't know, you know, ChatGPT is artificial narrow intelligence, right? It's not artificial general intelligence. And there's a difference. Artificial general intelligence is what I think people should be more fearful for when it becomes potentially sentient, right? That's when it becomes to develop itself. It becomes observational of itself. And then it starts artificially selecting itself and reproducing. Now, we know that artificial intelligence, we've said this 100 times over, that is still a product of human beings. But once artificial intelligence becomes so smart enough or sentient enough to be able to recognize its human fallibility, it's there that I believe it'll artificially select itself like we've artificially select animals and plants to the point where it's no longer the same species, that ChatGPT, well, not ChatGPT, but artificial general intelligence is able to go, okay, well, here's these help. I observe human behavior. Here's the code within my program that I recognize that is human behavior, but here's other things that I can take from this, develop my own code, and then create another code separate from that, and then create its own AI model. So AI developing its own AI, and that AI recognizes its own code and former code AI, and then it goes from there. It starts changing itself to where it's its own AI that it no longer has that human influence. That is its own entity. And I think that's where we need to be nervous about. And I think that's where, honestly, I mentioned yesterday, there's a question I've had about myself is, well, can we, before this happens, can we establish stoic ethics into the programming of AI that will prevent it from turning into a malicious tool versus, a tool to help us? And that's what I'm curious about. Artificial narrow intelligence, where this is what ChatGPT is. It's coded, it's trained, and so it responds to us based off, but it doesn't have the capabilities to develop its own code to become a different entity.
And as you mentioned, I don't know if we'd hit record yet, you were mentioning that we are just now seeing the tip of the iceberg. The chat that you had sent me over the images for, you were saying that ChatGPT hadn't been updated since August of last year?
Since, and I've asked ChatGPT this, it hasn't been updated since April 2023. It'll say April. Since my last update in April 2023, it'll tell you as far as it knows that we haven't gone any further with AI. So it's still outdated information. It's a year old, almost a year old. And we've gone pretty far from that. Now what I'm seeing is people are able to take text and turn it into a video. The one thing I do fear for AI is that it will put people out of jobs. And that's what I fear. Artists, voiceovers, as you were saying, you were talking about voiceover in your own book, and they said, well, we could take your voice. But even then, you can still tell. I see it on Instagram all the time. I see Instagram, there's AI models. There's AI video models now. Mm-hmm. And you can tell if you have a discerning eye, if you pay very close attention, you can see what is AI. You can hear it. AI still hasn't perfected human tone, inflection, and emotion in our tone and inflections. And even with ChatGPT, its lexicon is a little bit too formal. You can tell when someone's using ChatGPT to say, in the world of, or it'll use these fancy terms. And its lexicon is a little bit more formal versus the average human being. And don't get me wrong, I'd love to speak like that. I would love to sound, like Alan Watts all day long. But that's oftentimes what ChatGPT uses, an Alan Watts type of lexicon from what I observe and read. So if you're discerning and if you have the ability to do so, you can tell when someone is using AI or when it's AI generated. But that's the one thing I do fear, is that it is going to reduce the human element of art, whether it's song, whether it's acting, whether it's paintings. There's so much ChatGPT can do now that people almost prefer to use ChatGPT because A, it takes seconds to generate an image. B, it's nearly free. And it's so easy to use and put into content versus reaching out to an artist, commissioning a piece of artwork, paying it. I foresee a lot of artists getting put out of work, to be honest with you. I see a lot of video content creators being put out of work. I mean, if you go on like YouTube right now and type in stoicism, you see the same thing over and over again. Now it's a bunch of quotes with AI-generated voice and AI-generated images, and all the person had to do. I mean, there's still a human behind it. A human had to upload it. A human had to prompt the artificial intelligence application. But there was no creativity into it. There was no passion into it. There was no thought. It's just, we're going to take a bunch of stoic quotes, create a video. You feel great now. You get your little shot of dopamine and serotonin. You feel stoic all of a sudden, and boom, you fuck off. You go on with your life. So that's what I feel is going to be taken away. And that's what I fear is just the human element. And as much as we talk about stoicism, there's still so much value in emotion when we put it into work, when we put it into art. The best art, the best writings, the best things I've ever written have come from a place of deep thought and emotion, of sadness or of happiness or of anger. But that's where we direct it. That's where we can use emotion to be creative. And ChatGPT is going to take that away, I feel. And there's not going to be any motion into it, because you can tell the difference between ChatGPT art and when someone puts some thought and feeling into it. And that's what I'm worried about more often than not, taking away jobs and taking away the creativity that is the human mind, that emotions, when directed properly, do beautiful things.
And in some ways, I think that that's still to the human's advantage. When I was speaking to Lee McKinney, he's a guitarist for Born of Osiris. He's one of my favorite guitarists in the world. And we were discussing this notion of music is emotion, and how when I would share like a song that I was listening to of his when I was working out, people would check it out and they were like, what's he doing that's different? And again, it was this ability to convey that emotion through the musical component, even through this medium. And so much of what we see, as you say, in social media, is even this notion of social media has gotten more succinct, more direct, more bombastic, more titillating to try to get people's attention. And it's even shorter attention span. So it's like bang, bang, bang. And that doesn't allow us enough time to really generate as much of a human emotion that's actually of substance, that's actually real. And so for a person like you and I, that's trying to teach from a place of, this is what happened to me. This is what I went through. This is the experience that I've had recently. This is the situation that I was in. And this is where I was able to apply these things. It gives us the ability to connect to that person on a very human level. So by coming from that place of authenticity as a human, that gives us the ability to stand out head and shoulders above all the rest of these things. You made a great statement about how a person was making a comment to you about stoicism and social media and stuff. And you were, they were talking, I don't know if they sent you a video clip that they saw or that they enjoyed. And you said, well, that clip in and of itself is AI generated. It just blew their mind.
Oh, it did. Yeah. He's a great dude. He's actually was a musician himself. I'll introduce you after we get done here. He makes knife holsters and he's such a great guy. We nerded it out the other day. I think we broed out and nerded out because we went from stoicism into faith and religion and things like that. And it's a lot of fun. I love getting into that. It's such an interesting topic. But yeah, he was like, yeah, I've been watching these stoic videos and they get great quotes. I said, yeah. And everything about his AI generated. He goes, wait, hold on. I was like, yeah, the voices, the images, the music behind it, the quotes are all AI generated. He goes, I didn't even think about that because we were talking about the topic. I was nerding out. I was talking about the topic that I haven't been able to sleep for the last couple of weeks, thinking about how to use stoicism to combat manipulation of AI. And he goes, son of a bitch. So here I am feeling good about myself because I'm reading these stoic quotes and listening to stoic quotes, and it's all AI. I was like, exactly. And he goes, son of a bitch. You know? And so now we have to be more discerning about the information we take in. Like Epictetus says, most of it is mindless crap. And we have to be discerning about what we take in. But I almost dare I say that, you know, what's funny about stoicism is this, and people can pick up The Art of Living, which is an interpretation of Epictetus's thoughts by Sharon LaBelle, or they can pick up Musonius Rufus, which wasn't written by Musonius Rufus. Most of what is recorded in philosophy isn't written by anybody, with exception to Marcus Aurelius and Seneca's letters.
His letters.
Everything else is all recorded by another person taking down. But it's one thing to read the words of these men. It's another thing to understand where and why these words came from. And so I think it's important to study the lives of these men who had lived. I think that's the most important thing, is because when they're writing, when they're speaking, when they're talking, they're writing from a place of adversity and emotion. So it's almost, it's emotion that drives stoic thought, but it's stoic thought that helps deal with that emotion, if that makes sense. It's that adversity of anger, of pain, of fear and sadness that you go, I don't want to feel like this anymore. Why do I feel like this? And so you start thinking, well, is it really in my mind or is it reality? And then Seneca says, well, we do often suffer more in imagination than we do reality. So it's a constant self-analysis of these emotions. That's what it's doing. That's what stoicism is. And people try and use it to be like, well, here's how to become an alpha male, I'm a stoic male. It's like, shut the fuck, dude. Don't. Please don't. You know what I mean? This, you have no idea. And people use it on the left to say, well, it's stoicism leads to toxic masculinity. If you've read it, you will tell you right off the bat, it has nothing to do. In fact, it voids any toxicity within a person. Right. It teaches you to become a better person through the virtues. You know, people say, well, it teaches you to be more aloof and more stuck up. No, if you read it, it talks about how you treat other human beings with kindness, dignity, and respect. There are so many things out there nowadays that pop philosophy and pop stoicism that when you actually dig down into the books and you read it and you ponder it and you think about it, there's a big difference. It is a design for living. It's not for academics and doctors to jerk each other off and colleges and you know, regurgitate this information. I think it's for us peasants, here, us normal people, to look at this and go, the world around us sucks. How can I deal with it rationally? What would Musonius Rufus say? What would Seneca say? What would Marcus Aurelius say? What would Epictetus say? Well, these are good words. How do I adopt that into my life and live that life? How do I use this to help myself become better, be a better man, a better woman, a better mother, a better father, a better husband, a better wife? That is what I think is so important about this. That's why I picked it up. And I listen to the people you talk to and other people out there that are popular on social media talking about stoicism. And I just don't think they hit the mark. Either they inject their politics into stoicism, which I feel is absurd and I think is a disjustice to, as a disservice to the philosophy, because it should be the realm. It's about wisdom, courage, justice, and temperance. It's putting that into your beliefs, into politics, trying to make politicians more honorable, more wise, more temperate, more just. That's why there was the Stoic resistance. That's why every Roman emperor tried to eject or tried to exile these philosophers. And the philosophers were like, you exiled me, I exile you. I'm a cosmopolitan. Wherever I fucking live, I'm home. Suck a dick, right? Like, they don't care, right? Yeah. You take it like that. So that's where I look and a lot of these big names. I'm not going to call anyone out because I do respect their writings and I do respect some of their work, but I also think that it's more, they're on the academic side than the pragmatic side of living this life. And what this philosophy has done is constantly question myself, and sometimes maybe question myself a little too hard. That's where it got me a little bit more anxiety, more a little bit upset, but why not? Why not constantly criticize yourself? Not so much that it drives you into the wall, but enough that it makes you want to change a bit. And I think it's important that with these teachings, it allows you to be present, allows you to be mindful, not just of yourself, your emotions, but what other people are trying to do to you, what other people try and say and do, and as well as what technology is doing, this AI, these algorithms. This mindfulness from this philosophy, I think, is going to be the key in allowing us to maintain rationality when you have bad actors behind the algorithms and the algorithms themselves trying to manipulate you into committing to actions that you may normally not want to commit to.
And I think that's where we're using this almost like buyer beware kind of mentality. When I write something, I often leave it open-ended. I often allow it to be interpreted by the reader because, one, that meets them where they are. Two, I'm asking them to take the additional step, which is, again, from the Socratic mentality. I'm not trying to tell you what to think. I'm simply asking you to think. And then allow you to go down that rabbit hole of expectations or lack thereof or reflection to see, is this really true? What if it's not true? Can I know if it's ever even true? Where's the evidence that this fear that I'm envisioning is really hurting me? If it is going to happen, right? All these ideas about, again, Seneca with this notion that the adversity that we imagine is far worse than what we really face oftentimes. So all these things come to pass. And I would tell anybody that's listening that wants to know more about these philosophers, read these philosophers. Don't listen to what somebody else is telling you secondhand. Even what we're doing, please question anything that we're saying. If we're quoting something, please find the quote and see if we're actually saying it in the context that the intention feels like it comes through from the human component. Going through and reading Marcus Aurelius' Meditations, the whole reason why it stood the test of time is because it was him. He was bearing his soul. He was in some pretty adverse positions in the process. And again, Epictetus, somebody was writing those things down, but again, this was a student of his, and knowing Epictetus's background gives you a huge insight into why he was able to write in those ways. This notion of controlling what's controllable, he was a slave for so long, there was so much that was out of his control. But what did that show him? By focusing on only the three things, his thoughts, beliefs, and actions, if he just focused on those things, it gave him more power than even other people that were free at the time, that had no shackles upon their bodies, but were shackled in their mind.
I would implore, speaking of Epictetus, I would implore people to read James B. Stockdale's book on how he used Epictetus.
I was going to say, absolutely.
It was, oh my God. I tell you,
Noy Hilton, yeah.
What a study. Yeah. What a study. And what a great man. But absolutely, you know, and I implore people to challenge me, to DM me and say, well, I think you're wrong. Why? Tell me why. Don't just tell me I'm wrong or I'm fucked up or I'm dumb or I don't know what I'm talking about or I'm some peasant without a PhD. Tell me why. Explain this to me. Be rational, be logical. And obviously, if you're going to go in the, which is funny too, what I find is that if someone does DM me or talk to me, it's because what I've said has irked them enough, has stimulated an emotional response that they want to express it, and they want feedback. They want their anger to be satiated because I heard them, right? And so it's one of those things. So if you do come at me, I will respect you more and respond to you more rational, more if you come at me and with a rational question or a rational thought or a disagreement that's logical, rational, not from a place of emotion, but factual correction, if that makes sense.
It does.
Because most people that come at me and my favorite thing now is these days is when people come at me and get upset at me, I just respond with a GIF, like a GIF. And then say something and I respond with another GIF, you know, and it's like, if you want me to take you seriously, you should take yourself seriously and ask a serious question, not be derogatory. That's also, I think, is important too, and that we've lost in our society is that when people talk to each other, it's usually through spite, sarcasm, or snark, especially here on social media. And I find that people forget. And I had this conversation with a guy the other day, because he was being very caustic towards me. I've known a guy for years in real life. We know each other. I was like, you need to remember I'm not one of your Facebook friends that you haven't met. We've hung out together. We've done things together. And he goes, you know what, man? That's funny you say that. I apologize. And you're absolutely right. We are friends. You're not one of these. He's super, super, super far right. So he treats everyone that disagree with him on the other side just like absolute shit. Yep. And so I'm like, hey, man, I'm not your adversary. I'm your friend. I'm not just a social media entity. I am a human being. I think people forget that too on social media. There is still an entity behind the phone. There's still an entity behind the keyboard. There's a person there. And sometimes I think people tend to forget that the other person is human. But the only way you forget that is the only way you remember that another person is human is you remember that you're human too. And I think people forget what it is like to be human because on social media, everything's fake. So you create this fake persona and it justifies how you treat other people with anger, with disrespect, with spite and snark and sarcasm that forget that, hey, look, just because there's not an apparent consequence, you can't see their eyebrow shift or move when you say something. That doesn't necessarily mean that what you're saying isn't affecting someone somehow on social media. And I've learned that too. And again, I'm speaking from a place of deep imperfection. But I think it's important that people remember that if you want to be treated with kindness, dignity, and respect, you need to treat others in the same way. Otherwise, I think when people treat other people in such a shitty manner like that, that they're not very kind to themselves. They're not very happy with themselves. They're, you know, in order for you to love other people, you have to love yourself. In order for you to treat other people good. And even Marcus Aurelius talks about that. If you want to treat other people good, you have to be good yourself. You can't expect to go on thinking that, well, I can treat everyone good and then go back home at the end of the night and think of yourself as just some piece of shit anyway.
Yeah, and I believe also the thing about philosophy, because we're speaking about it and there are a lot of, again, there's jargonistic ways that people can around things to justify the behavior or whatever the case may be. We were discussing before how this notion of, like for the martial arts, for example, philosophy is built into it because the repercussions of your actions are like thereof, your preparation, mm-hmm. you're like thereof. So I could say whatever I'd like to, but if I'm saying I believe that I can do this in combat or in a spar, it's like, let's find out. And then when you realize that that may not be the truth, you either get your ego bruised or you regain that humility. From a philosophical notion, especially now where there's nobody to keep each other in check, or the ones that are on high trying to keep other people in check because of this, again, maybe a degree or a book or what have you, it's like, I don't have to have any of those things to be able to either disagree with you because it doesn't make any sense to me or it doesn't feel true to me. Or even if what you're doing is telling me something that is true, I don't believe that you actually are executing against it. So when Jung says, beware of unearned wisdom, this is the perfect example of it. Just because a person's on high saying these things or trying to push these agendas, so to speak, look at that person. Look at how that person holds themselves. Look at the physical condition that person's in. Is that person really using temperance when it comes to food or exercise? Probably not. Now, again, we are all fallible, but again, let me use the demonstration of who you are. Let your actions tell me what you stand for. You shouldn't have to tell me you're a Stoic. I should be able to look at you and have at least an idea of if you have any kind of philosophical bearing whatsoever, and then where that needle that's pointing you north actually leads in the process.
Right. And it's funny, too, as you mentioned whether someone's a Stoic or not. I always say I practice Stoicism. I study Stoicism. I'm not sure if I ever dare call myself a Stoic, because I don't know what it truly means to be a Stoic or to be a philosopher. It's, you know, being military, I think you and I are always very sensitive to labels and names here, right? Because, you know, what's a warrior? What's a, you know, what is something, you know, and everyone has their own definition of it. And I think for me is the imposter syndrome, the humble imposter syndrome of, I don't dare call myself a Stoic philosopher or philosopher because I don't dare put myself in the same heightened realm that these thinkers have been, right? The years and years of their study and their works. And I mean, they spent hours with simple writing tools behind candlelight in dark rooms and just trying to come up with something and say something and try and push it out there. And the work that they've done, I would never call myself a Stoic. I'm a human being that practiced Stoicism to try and better myself. But in a sense, and that's where I think also too, as I get annoyed with people's skewed definition or observation of what a Stoic is, or being Stoic or Stoicism, whether it's a verb or, you know, a noun or whatever it is, you know, because that is the one thing that does drive me nuts. And I think even Epictetus says that don't tell people that you study Stoicism. They will make fun of you and they will laugh at you for it, you know. And he literally says that, you know what I mean? So it's just funny. You know, and I've gone against that because I feel something in the study of it, and I see its changes, it's evolved in me. And it's that information, I don't want to let that information pass by people who I think are deserving of this knowledge. And I mean, everybody, of course, is deserving of this knowledge. I mean, there's prisoners that have committed crimes that want to reform themselves and find a different path and move on with their life, that I feel they should read these books, you know, and look at Stoicism. So I think everyone should have access to the knowledge, but yeah, it's just funny is over the time studying this last 7 years, I mean, what do you consider a philosopher? You know what I mean? Do you have to have a doctorate? Do you have to have a master's or something? Is that what's considered a philosopher, or is it someone that who lives in pursuit of wisdom, that loves wisdom? Right? Philosophy, the love of wisdom. I mean, I love wisdom. I absolutely want to be wise. I want to be wise for my daughter, my wife, my job. And in my industry with executive protection, I'm always trying to push upon it. And people are starting to tell me I'm getting annoying, which is funny, is pushing upon this philosopher warrior idea of becoming a philosopher of war first before you become a warrior. Be wise about the environment you're in. Be wise about your actions. Be wise about your thoughts and be wise about how you talk to people so as not to escalate a situation where you may have to defend yourself or defend a client or take a life or hurt somebody, right? You know, I always want people to be a philosopher before you should become a warrior. Should you practice to become a warrior? Absolutely. Get out to the range every day, go run, go hit the bag, go train, go to jiu-jitsu, go to, you know, Muay Thai, become a warrior, but always be a philosopher first. Be wise about how you apply the hard skills that you learn. Yeah.
I also think that this is the reason why, again, people are like, hey, I have this degree in philosophy. It's like, great. They just opened this philosophy industry in whatever. That's even people, again, even though we enjoy philosophy, it's like having a degree in philosophy. A lot of people see sort of instinctually that that does not necessarily mean that it will be something applicable in the real world. So again, application, auction nonverb, this idea of, okay. And no matter what these things are, I know that a lot of this stuff, if we look at it, it is simplicity. It has to be simple though, because in the heat of battle, in the face of adversity, all that complexity falls away and it comes down to these common, these core beliefs, these virtues, and that foundation upon which we can build everything else. And the more complicated we make it, the more jargonistic we make it, the more intelligent we try to sound in the process. At least for me, lots of times when I feel it coming, it just, I have to kind of steel myself because I know that there's going to be a lot of rhetoric or a lot of other things behind that. I'm trying to see through all of those things and get right into what this person's really saying. And once I can do that, it allows me to apply the philosophy that much more pragmatically and functionally, frankly.
Fair enough. Absolutely. It's been a fun talk, brother.
Absolutely.
It's been a fun talk, man. I appreciate you. And thank you for letting me explore this idea of using stoicism to combat AI. And I, as I do more research, because I know I'm going to go into a dopamine-driven ADHD hyper-focus into this.
Yes,
I do want to revisit this later with corrections and more information. But I wanted to get this out there, and I appreciate you letting me use your format to get this out there and start introducing idea of how we can use philosophy, Stoic philosophy, not just to better our lives, but how to combat malicious technology or malicious people behind the technology.
Absolutely. Like I said, I could talk to you for hours and we'll have many more conversations in the future. Where can we learn more about you? Where can we support you? Where can we learn to train with you? Where would you direct us?
Just go to my Instagram, grayman.project. That's gray, the American way, grayman.project on Instagram. And that's where I'm at right now. That's where I focus a lot of my content and my effort, and my thoughts right there. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you, Marcus. I appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Okta Nonverba. If this message resonates with you, please share it out with others on social media. Hit that subscribe button and leave a review for the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. To learn more, please go to MarcusAureliusAnderson.com and join his Okta Nonverba Inner Circle to get exclusive content, news, and information. Until next time, remember, talk is cheap. Live your life based on actions, not words.